What do we want to do? If we are thinking about doing a collaboration, one, we have the considerations that we talked about up front, but specifically with respect to our intellectual property rights, we want to make sure we are addressing ownership. There might be a reason for one party to own 75% and the other own 25%, which is really important in the sense of like how will revenues be split, which kind of goes to the revenue sharing as well.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. I'm your host, Erin Austin, lawyer, mama of kid and doggy, tennis player, once and future trail runner, YouTube addict, and dreamer. I provide legal tips and bits for turning your expertise into recurring revenue, turning your time-intensive hourly-based business to one that is scalable and hopefully one day saleable is the journey from hourly to exit. This podcast is for experts, consultants, coaches, and other professional services providers with sophisticated corporate clients. If you're investing in the growth of your business, you need advice and resources that address the issues that set you apart from other service-based businesses. Those templates for online businesses don't mean a thing when your client sends their 50-page master services agreement to you for signature. Stop playing small because you don't know how to protect your ideas. Hourly to Exit is here to show you how to navigate the maze of contracts and intellectual property issues so that you can safely and profitably share your ideas with clients and with collaborators. Before we dive in, please remember that this podcast provides general information only. The content of this podcast should not be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. The information presented is not intended to be a substitute for professional legal consultation. Each legal situation is unique, and the laws and regulations can vary widely by location, and they do change over time. For specific legal advice regarding your individual circumstances, please consult with a qualified attorney who can address your specific needs. Now, let's get started with today's topic. Hey, welcome everyone to this month's LinkedIn Live. I have these every last Wednesday of the month at noon Eastern. So just so a little housekeeping, these are recorded and you can find the recording in three different places. One, here on LinkedIn at my profile. I also have a YouTube channel, the Think Beyond IP YouTube channel. I don't have a link for it, but we can get one later. And then it is also recorded as an episode for my podcast, the Hourly to Exit podcast, which you can find wherever you listen to your podcast. Sometimes, though, these don't go as smoothly as I would hope they would, and I have to re-record them. But generally, what we do today will be part of the podcast as well. So one thing about StreamYard is it's completely one way. I can't see you out there. Please feel free to use the comment boxes to say hi. And then also as I go through, please add your questions as well. Generally, I will talk to you for about 15 to 20 minutes about our topic of choice, and then we'll have plenty of time for questions and answers. And in the event, for some reason, I don't get to your question, I will make sure that I answer them in the comments for this program. So as we get started, of course, I have to start with a little disclaimer that this is legal information, but not legal advice, and it doesn't create an attorney-client relationship. And so if you have specific questions about your circumstances, then you do need to talk to a lawyer about those specifics. All right, so let us get started. Today, we're talking about collaboration issues. I know a lot of you ask me about, have plans to collaborate with colleagues. I've collaborated with colleagues, maybe even one who's listening right now. And there are a number of issues that you want to think about, but collaboration is a great way to leverage your own expertise. It is, you're bringing your ideas, collaborating with somebody else with complementary ideas. That is very much the 1+1=3. And so while we'll talk about a couple of things to be mindful of, I do think they're very valuable and a great way to leverage our intellectual property. So this is the third step in my audit protect leverage framework, where at the first step with audit, we make sure that we own what we think we own.
We don't want to infringe other people's rights as we're creating our leveraged offers. First, make sure we own everything. When we do have rights that are valuable, we want to make sure we're protecting them using agreements and copyright registration as appropriate. And then leverage and collaboration is one of those fantastic processes. So let's get going. As you know, to surprise absolutely no one, the main focus will be the intellectual property elements of collaborations, but it is creating a partnership. So there are lots of things you need to think about. We can get very excited about our ideas, and we should be excited about them and who we're going to collaborate with. But we do need to be thinking really kind of clearly and articulating what we expect to put into and get out of that collaboration. And so these are just some of the things I want to make sure that you're thinking about as you enter a collaboration, because it is creating essentially a general partnership. And so we'll talk about more of that as we go on, but it's not just the fun times that you're having during the webinar. There's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that you also need to be thinking about when you enter a collaboration. You know, by the way, all this stuff will be available to you, so you'll have these slides, but let's talk about intellectual property. So there's two angles we need to look at intellectual property with our collaboration. One is with respect to the pre-existing materials that each collaborator is bringing to the collaboration, and then the new materials that will be born from that collaboration. So with our pre-existing materials, I mean, the reason you want to collaborate with someone is because they've got some great process, skill, method, training, something that combined with yours would make a great result. And so on the front end, you're going to need to give each other permission to use your pre-existing materials. And so you will want to make sure that license is very clearly always. I mean, I won't say this again, that I want everything to be in writing, right? And signed by all the parties. But you want to make sure all these things are very clearly set forth. So you want to make sure there are limits on how they can use it. You don't just give them a license to do whatever they want to with your pre-existing materials. In particular, not allowing sub-licensing. This will become much more important as we move through this conversation. And then mutual indemnification. So if I take something off of ChatGPT, we're going there. I have something AI generated and then I contribute it to the collaboration and I don't really have the rights to that, and that becomes a source of a claim, then we would want to make sure everyone who's contributing to the collaboration is standing behind the materials that they are contributing to the collaboration. But the biggest thing, the thing that surprises everyone the most, is what happens with the new materials that are created. A kind of a funny concept that in the absence of something in writing, we're going to have something in writing, but I want to put the fear of intellectual property law in you, that if you don't have something in writing, what will happen is that the default is that each collaborator owns 100% of the new materials that are created. And it's a strange concept, but it basically means that each person has the same rights that one person would have if they owned it by themselves. So they each own 100%. So some of the terms that all mean the same thing, the same concept of joint ownership under intellectual property law, under copyright law in particular, co-ownership, co-author, joint ownership, co-copyright, joint work, they're all talking about the same thing, where the default under copyright law is that those co-authors, co-collaborators own 100% of the new materials that were created in the absence of something in writing. So how does this happen? It happens when each party, each collaborator, makes a copyrightable contribution. I'm not going to talk about what copyrightable is today, but you can search my prior LinkedIn Lives or my website for what copyrightable means, but it has to be. So if someone, I was given, for instance, if someone did contribute something that was in the public domain, that would not be copyrightable, that they would therefore not be a co-owner. If somebody just contributed a map of the United States, that's not copyrightable. So it's someone's contributing something that is copyrightable and to the final work, and it is the intent of the parties that all the contributions will create a merged, unified whole. And so what does that look like? An example here. Two people co-create, co-author, jointly author an illustrated children's book. So one of the co-authors provides the text, the other co-author provides the illustrations. So each co-author will own 100% of the entire work. So the writer doesn't own the text and the illustrator, artist doesn't own the illustrations. They each own 100% of the entire work. And so here you're like, okay, well, I guess that's kind of makes sense because one's creating half and the other one's creating half. Okay, that makes sense. What if one party does 75% of the work? Let's say it is a chapter book. So most of it is text, and maybe at every chapter, there's an illustration. It's part of the entire whole of that book. What happens then is still the same. If each party contributes a copyrightable element, and if it is intended to be created to create a single whole work that will be sold together as a unit, you still have each co-creator owning 100% of the entire work. And we have a question. I will go ahead and show it here, which is, what if someone contributes already copyrighted content? Well, they have to own the rights to it. So I'm going to assume that they own the rights to it. And that would be the same thing. Remember that copyrights arise at the moment of creation. So you might be creating something. So it might be the pre-existing material that we talked about that you're licensing in, or it might be something that you are contributing as part of the joint work. And so it will be one of the two buckets. So either you own it, it's pre-existing and you're licensing it and you need to own it or have the rights to contribute it, or you are, maybe you're creating a derivative of something, like you have a course and you're contributing something that's derivative from it. So that would be something new, but based on something copyrighted. So one of the two is going to be the case. So this is why we need collaboration agreements, because unless you have an agreement to the contrary, again, jointly, equally owned, no matter who contributed how much. All right. So why does, I mean, the big reason this matters, it's 100% is kind of, okay, that's great. What does it mean as a practical matter? As a practical matter, it means that when each person owns 100% of the copyright, they can individually, without consent of the other co-authors, exploit the copyrights as if, again, they were a solo copyright owner. So they, on their own, without consent of the other copyright owners, can grant to third parties permission to use the work. It can only be non-exclusive, but they don't need the consent of other parties. They can sell, like if I own my 100% of that work, I can sell my entire interest to someone. And now you have another joint owner that you didn't know you're going to be in business with. And then you can create derivatives from it as well. And so these are things that are the default if you don't have a collaboration agreement in place that modifies this. These are just some examples, obviously. I mean, anything that a single copyright owner can do, a co-copyright owner can do without consent of the others, except grant exclusive rights or sell. The other thing is, or sell the whole thing. They couldn't sell the whole, all the copyrights in the book. So what we do have, we do still have a duty to account to the other owners for any profit. So I can take that illustrated book and I can license non-exclusive rights for all of South America to a publisher down there. I don't need to get consent from the other co-owners, but I do have to account and pay and share the profits that I get from that license. And so again, you can't sell an exclusive license to South America, but I can sell a non-exclusive license to all of South America, which obviously would affect the value of the entire property. So we want to make sure that we have that under, we're on agreement on how to do that. What do we want to do? If we are thinking about doing a collaboration, one, we have the considerations that we talked about up front, but specifically with respect to our intellectual property rights, we want to make sure we are addressing ownership. There might be a reason for one party to own 75% and the other own 25%. which is really important in the sense of like, how will revenues be split, which kind of goes to the revenue sharing as well. You want to have any limitations on use. Can you create derivatives from it? Can you license parts of it to, like our example, South American publishing rights? And when we talked about the pre-existing material at the beginning, what can be done with the rights going in? If we haven't clearly set limits on what is being contributed in pre-existing material, the sub-licensing rights, then those would pass through to my co-owner and therefore to who I sub-license it to. And so it really starts at the beginning for any materials that you're contributing, your pre-existing materials, controlling what happens on the way in. And then your collaboration agreement will also control what happens with the joint work and how it can be used, transferred, exploited on the back end. And revenue sharing. There may be reasons to split revenue sharing. Maybe one person wants to just get a flat fee or something, and the other one's willing to take risk on the upside. And so maybe you sell the rights publishing advance. One person gets 100% of the publishing advance, and the other person gets all of the royalties because it's so you can do. I mean, these are agreements. There's not any statutory issues. You can make whatever deal makes sense for your collaboration. All right. So that is what I wanted to talk to you guys about. I would love to get your questions, comments, and see if there's anything else I can cover today. And by the way, again, if things come up later, feel free to put it in the comments in LinkedIn, and I will get those as you get normal comments in LinkedIn to any post, and I can answer them there. I do welcome everyone to connect with me. If you're not already connected with me on LinkedIn, please feel free to do that. And I also am happy to take suggestions for future LinkedIn Lives. I like to talk about copyrights in particular and contracts and how the two work together. Today's is a perfect example of how the two work together. The pre-existing was the first slide. I'm going to go back to it. We got a little bit of time. So the pre-existing materials is when we're coming together as a collaboration, I'm going to assume that each of the collaborators has something valuable to bring to the table. That's why we are working together. Now, it might not be. It might be that one of the partners is just a fantastic facilitator, or all of the materials are going to be created within the collaboration. But if, for instance, you have a course and you're bringing some parts of the course with you, and that will be incorporated into this collaboration. That's going to be, maybe you have like a course on the internet that's kind of a DIY, and you're going to be doing a collaboration that's going to be an all-day summit. You're going to be taking some of the materials from your course and bringing it into this all-day summit. You will want to make sure that at the front end that you have a license, which very clearly defines how the joint venture, how the collaboration can use your pre-existing materials. And it is especially important. I mean, it's always important when you have intellectual property to have things in writing, but it's especially important because the joint works that come out of the collaboration, what you're creating for that all-day seminar, for instance, that will be a joint work. You want to make sure that what the co-owners can now do with your pre-existing materials has been limited. And so you've limited it at the front end. Sometimes we forget to limit it on the back end, but at least you've limited it on the front end. So that's what that's about. When starting negotiation for a collaboration agreement, how much do we want to spell out desired terms versus asking counterpart to make suggestions? Well, a collaboration agreement should really be that. I mean, if we go to the considerations, you should start with the end in mind. I mean, you're a facilitator, so I know you know. What is it that we want to get out of? Like, what do we want the transformation to be with this collaboration? Or what is each party bringing to it? And so someone can be the driver. Often there is a leader. I mean, it's not at all unusual for one person to kind of drive the collaboration forward. And they're really kind of bringing multiple people in. Certainly that happens with summits and things like that, where there's maybe one person driving and they're bringing in other collaborators. But it depends on who has a better idea of where it's going to go. So if one collaborator has the big picture and they're bringing in the resources that they need to make that big idea come alive, then they're going to start the negotiation. But sometimes it's two people who go, you know what, we should work together and you're going to do it together. Sometimes it's not a collaboration, though. Sometimes it's literally just a license. It's literally could be that driving force, we'll say, who really just needs to get access to somebody else's pre-existing materials. I wouldn't call that a collaboration. I would call that a license. But when I'm talking about collaboration, like we're really working together to create the new joint work. So hope that helps. All right, everyone. Well, have a wonderful rest of your day. And thanks for joining me. This week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast is sponsored by the NDA Navigator. Non-disclosure agreements, also known as NDAs, are the bedrock of protecting your ideas and your business's confidential information. Of course, I recommend that you have a lawyer review any agreement before you sign it. However, facing a constant stream of NDAs can be overwhelming, especially when time and budget constraints prevent you from seeking full legal review. That's where the NDA Navigator comes in. Designed specifically for entrepreneurs, consultants, and business owners with corporate clients, the NDA Navigator is your guide to understanding, negotiating, and implementing NDAs. Empower yourself with legal insights and practical tools when you don't have the time or funds for a full legal review. Get 20% off by using the coupon code H2E at protectyourexpertise.com. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. Don't forget to check out the show notes for the resources and organizations mentioned during the episode. If you find the podcast to be valuable, please subscribe so you get notified of new episodes every week. And I would be so grateful for a rating and review, and it helps get the word out. See you next week.